Hey, welcome everyone. Remember Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting. Before we start, I have to make some announcements. So here you are. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. I would like to remind the public that there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and turn them to to help expedite public comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. And then the committee comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. So at the moment, all committee members are present. And let's go ahead and move to item number one, Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Hassan, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Please join me at President Blatt's speaking power. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You're seated. We'll move to item two, public comments. Are there any comments from public attending in person?
Yes, just
sure.
I do have a comment. I think there's been some changes about how things are being done with this water board. And it really is from what we used to have. And we have a lot of concern about that. And just how it's going to be affecting a lot of people in our area. And I don't know, but I see how quickly it's affected what you have on your agenda tonight. It's going to be for a developer. And so you better make sure you have the adequate water supply. Or there might be a little pushback from the community. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment. Any comments from public attending workmen?
There is none online.
All right. Let's then move to item. There's been some changes. We're going to move to item 5.1, then 5.2, then item 3, then item 4.1, item 6, and item 7. Any objections from committee members? Process. Okay, let's move to item 5.1, Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan Update, presented by Mr. Matt Dickens. Mr. Dickens, the floor is all yours.
Thank you, Director Chair Ozerhofsky. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, let me get my screen set up. Now, can you see my screen okay?
Yes, we can.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you, Chair Ozerhofsky. And members of the committee. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager, and tonight I'm providing an overview of planning efforts which the agency is preparing to embark on, including the SCV Water's first, for all intents and purposes, water use efficiency strategic plan and demand forecasting. So tonight's agenda, we'll look at, again, we'll have a little bit of a brief statement of Waterdeep's efficient strategic planning importance to the agency. I'll provide some history and current status. As we know, SCB Water merged and launched in 2018 following Senate Bill 634. And so there is some history here in the Valley with Waterdeep's efficient strategic planning. Then we'll talk about kind of what's on the radar for the planning process. We'll look at water demand forecasting. I'll provide an overview of project objectives, milestones, schedule, and resource needs, and then we'll conclude with next steps. So Waterdeep's efficiency strategic plan is an essential component to SCB Water's initiatives to secure water reliability, water quality, and water affordability, each of which is critical to supporting the agency's sustainability, viability, and exceptional quality of life here in the Valley. Regarding the water use efficiency strategic plan, as I mentioned, we do have some history with water use efficiency strategic plans and the conservation planning process here in the Valley, and things that have kind of had legacy impacts on the agency's practices today, but we're getting ready to move into a new compliance period. And so now is an ideal time to look at water efficiency strategic planning as we move towards the new conservation long-term framework. So a little bit of history. In 2009, the SCB family water suppliers adopted the Valley's first, if you will, water use efficiency strategic plan, which identified measures for the retail agencies and at the time the wholesaler to embark on to accomplish, I believe, is a 10% conservation goal. Shortly following that effort, the state passed Senate Bill's special session 7-7, 20% reduction by 2020, a reduction in gallons per capita day. And at that point in time, the Castaic Lake Water Agency and the retailers embarked on a water use efficiency strategic plan. That was updated again in 2016 following the drought, again with the primary purpose of accomplishing the compliance period, the compliance requirements of gallon per capita day reductions by 2020. And then in 2020 through 2023, following the sunset of SBX 7-7, the agency kind of continued with a business as usual conservation strategy of 2% annual reductions in gallon per capita day, i.e. 22% by 2021, 24% by 2022, and 26% by 2023. So updates occurring in 2018, the California State Legislature adopted and approved AB 1668 and SB 606, which incorporated annual water use objectives. Those compliance period will have the first compliance period to start in 2024 through 2025, where certain components will be affected. Then 2025 through 2030, we see the gallons per capita day. Again, just turning back to the annual water use objectives, those include a residential indoor and outdoor objective, a landscape irrigation, commercial landscape irrigation objective, and a water loss target, as well as commercial, industrial, and institutional performance standards. And so in 2024 through 2025, that's the first period. The second period is 2025 through 2030, where we see the state moving from 55 gallons per person per day for the residential indoor standard down to 47, and also more prescriptive irrigation objectives. And in 2030 and beyond, it's reduced to gallons per capita day, or indoor residential gallons per day would be 42, and even stricter regulations on irrigation use for the objectives. Additionally, what we need to incorporate and take into consideration as we develop our agency's water use efficiency strategic plan include AB 1572, which was passed in October by the governor, which establishes, again, a non-functional turf ban with irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water. Also, there's updates in AB 1573 that further incorporate more native landscapes and irrigation efficiency improvements in the model water efficiency landscape ordinance. Additionally, we have water loss requirements that we're going to need to comply with, take into account recycled water expansion and SCV water's sustainability objectives. So quite a bit of components as we move into developing our agency's plan. So the plan components will incorporate a water demand forecasting, which includes business as usual, i.e. Demands as we see them today and forecasted demands for future growth with a straight line interpolation to what we call full build out. That's when development's completed. We'll have business as usual cases with land use developments as they are provided to us through general and specific plans. And we'll have business as usual with traffic analysis zones that is provided through SCAG data or the Southern California Association of Governments. It'll also incorporate econometric analysis, that is impact of economy and economic forces on water consumption and development, climate change impacts that have been documented and published, passive conservation, which is plumbing codes and market efficiencies as they are improved in the market and forecasted, and then active conservation, which is conservation that is accelerated or stimulated through agency activity. Additionally, we'll look at community water conservation performance historically, community conservation opportunities, ultimately resulting in the development of strategies and measures, which will help us accomplish our agency's objectives and to make progress towards or exceed those annual urban water use objectives that are embedded in AB 1668 and SB 606, the Conservation Long-Term Framework. So a little bit a sneak peek into water demand forecasting. We did have a contract with a consultant that we launched in 2020. Typically, we work with a consultant to develop, at least over the 2010 through 2020 period, we worked with an external consultant to develop our conservation planning as well as our demand forecasting. We developed a tool in-house that we can manage and operate and run scenarios as the agency sees fit, as well as those that take into account real-time growth and real-time changes in water use. We completed that tool in 2021. However, for use with the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, we maintained the course that we had in 2015 for the same course, similar course to what we did in 2015's urban planning process. So we do have the water demand factor tool that we can run. It's a GIS-based tool that we can run, and it is housed on our GIS system. However, we need to update that with new demands, new factors, new factoids, as well as integrate it into our workflow so that it's prepared for use and staff are trained on how to operate the model going forward. This kind of shows an example of what I'm talking about when I say business as usual demands and how water demand factors work. So in this case, these general inputs, existing inventory of products, units by type, demand factors by product type and end use, i.e. typical residential use, indoor per certain number of homes per acre, or larger lot homes or apartment complexes or commercial facilities, whatever you want to look at it. Population, we look at general plans, specific plans for development. We can take traffic analysis zone data, which might influence how new development ultimately is constructed. And then we take new development as well, which has similar information, but those demands aren't published or known because they're not necessary. They're not, we don't have historical consumption. They're based off of published data. So we would take them at what we envision or what the new efficiencies in their water usage might look like. this information is put into the water demand forecasting tool, and we get over to the right, which shows us kind of a model of existing inventory uses line A, new development. When I say straight line interpolated, we take our start date and run it through full build out over time. And that A plus B would equal the community's demand forecast. And then we may temper that with traffic analysis zone information that might bring that down a little bit. And then we would again start adding those other components that I mentioned before, which would include things like econometric data, climate change data, active passive conservation, those types of things. That will ultimately bring these demands, have some sort of impacts and influence on demands over time. So this is just an explanation of how these models work. Okay, so project objectives. How we envision this project working is that first we will set up the water demand factor tool, initialize and set up our business as usual scenarios so that we have a master scenario under this plan. Phase two is to launch our water use efficiency strategic plan. The RFP is expected to come out in November. Selection would occur in December, and then staff would seek board consideration in January, February, and for board consideration. That process will help us identify the variables that would then go back into the water demand factor tool to allow us to calibrate it, if you will, based off of the analysis conducted in the strategic plan. Then those two processes will continue to work together, whereas staff will finalize and develop the maintenance and training paradigm for the tool to maintain it and integrate it into our workflow. And then staff will work with the water use efficiency strategic plan to incorporate stakeholder engagement, board adoption, all in advance of use with the urban water management plan. This is a kind of a Gantt chart here that we can kind of see water demand factors launching. In October, we have a scope of work that it's going to be November launches. We hope to wrap up in March or April. We have fiscal years, the conservation RFP and development launching November, running through September. Configuration of the water demand factor tool launching in February, concluding in July. WDF finalization is a perpetual or a program that's in perpetuity. For the agency, the conservation plan adoption ideally could occur somewhere around Q2, Q3 of FY25. Urban water management planning prep for the 2025 urban water management plan, which is due on July 1, 2026, would start in January 2025. In addition to that, staff would begin updates to the agency's water shortage contingency plan. I just wanted to share this because this project does incorporate multiple internal stakeholders across the agency, as well as various different types of project sponsors, as shown here, product managers, key users, internal stakeholders. Not everything's, you can't see because the slide's kind of clipped here, but this is a project charter that shows how the agency and our departments are working together, roles and responsibilities of staff, as well as project milestones, budget, and then ways that we can evaluate successful implementation and development of the plan and the water demand factor tool. So in terms of next steps in November 2023, again, we have our statement of work for procurement for the water demand factor. We have received an outline, but we'll receive the final proposal next week. We will be submitting a request for proposals for the water use efficiency strategic plan. In December 2023, we'll review those responses. In January 2024, we'll have a presentation back to the Water Resources and Watershed Committee for consideration and staff recommendations. And then ideally in January 2025, we can present for board consideration the selection of the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan consultant or consulting group. With that, I hope that provides a nice outline of what we're getting ready to embark on with our agency. We're very excited. Staff are mobilizing and preparing for developing a water use efficiency strategic plan that not only helps the agency comply with the mandates, meet its own sustainability objectives, but those that will ideally better serve our customers and provide increased customer service excellence for long-term sustainability and water conservation. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Any questions from public attending in person?
Yes, I'd like to know how this really is going to affect the public.
Go ahead. What's your question? Can you repeat your question? Can you please repeat your question or state your comment?
I have a question with regard to how much this is going to affect the general public. You're talking about your defenses for developers, that sort of thing. It's what I'm seeing in almost everything you do. So I think there's a point you're going to get to, and what they're saying is going to be in December. I think, again, that is to make people think, oh, you're getting ready for Christmas, all of that. But it makes me a little bit skeptical of the intent of how you're doing it and the timing of what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dickens, can you just briefly respond to this and explain what is the purpose of this plan? Of the water use efficiency strategic plan.
Yes, thank you, Chair Ozerhofsky. So the purpose of the plan is to identify water conservation programs and measures that will help the community comply and meet the mandates that are embedded in state. California state legislative mandates from AB 1668 and SB 606, so that we can show that we're making progress towards those legislative mandates, i.e. these annual urban water use objectives. So again, what we're going to have to do in layperson's terms is every year we're going to have to, based off of state law, show these annual urban water use objectives that are made up of residential indoor use, residential outdoor use, commercial outdoor use, and a water loss target, which will be measured in acre feet or gallons per person per day, however we measure that. And then what we have to do is show that our actual production meets those objectives, or that we're making progress towards meeting those objectives, as mandated by the state. Further, we're going to have to develop and implement commercial performance standard measures that the agency is going to have to engage closely with our commercial sector to help them conserve water as well. And we have to report annually to the state that we're doing both of those things, meeting or making progress or meeting our water use objectives on an annual basis, and also our commercial, industrial, institutional performance measures. So what we want to do is we want to develop in this plan, work very closely with our community, our customers, our ratepayers, to find programs and to develop a water use efficiency strategic plan that provides us the most cost-effective way for the agent, for the community, to meet those targets.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Any questions from public attending virtual?
There is none.
Directors, questions, comments? Oops.
That's the check committee working.
Solution?
It was a dirt hole. Pat, you talked about the broadcasting demands, and you referred to the an annual reduction of 2% year over year as the business as usual. Then later on, I think slide 12 and 13, you talked about the RFP for water demand factors. So is this coming up with a factor such as gallons per residential unit or gallons per acre of a particular type of development, or is the objective of that part of the work plan to come up with an estimate of actual future demand? In my mind, there's a difference between coming up with factors versus coming up with a demand projection. So I just want to make sure that there's clarity on our objective is for this first RFP.
Yeah, so thank you, Director Marks. And I imagine some of this will be further clarified in the scope of work and statement of work from both the model developer and the water use efficiency strategic plan consultant, but I'll do my best. The demand factors, you're right, are different than forecasting demand, but developing the demand factors is kind of a first step, and then understanding the aggregate demand of all of your existing profiles demands, which are demand factors based off of product types, and then adding those to the development as we're aware of them in the general plans or specific plans if we have them available to us. So our objective is to, again, look at existing demands, which fluctuate from year to year. We know what they are. We can categorize those into demand factors, if you will, but the cumulative sum of all of our demands would equal what our current demands look like. And then we forecast that to full build out in a business as usual scenario. So it looks fairly flat, although we know it fluctuates. So there will have to be some additional analysis, and this will happen later. Then we add future development demand and straight line interpolate it from when it starts to when full build out occurs. The sum of existing demands plus future demands, the aggregate, is the sum of our future demand. That is business as usual. That means it hasn't been tempered with econometric data. It hasn't been tempered with climate change data. It hasn't been tempered with market efficiency, passive conservation, nor will it be tempered with active conservation, which is agency stimulated. So our first objective is, again, to develop a business as usual baseline demand factor that we can utilize in a scenario and then start adding those factors to the analysis, which will allow us to get improved visibility and hopefully decrease the range of uncertainty that we're currently dealing with. I'll give you an example. We've had major changes in demand over the past 10 years. if we were to look at what our forecasted demands were and what our actual demands look like, they can fluctuate as much as 30% on a monthly basis or on an annual basis. That's pretty tough in terms of modeling, right? And I think in regression analysis, you would say that that kind of deviation from the mean might be fairly uncertain, or at least increase the uncertainty components. That's why we want to add in those econometric data, climate change, econometric analysis, climate change analysis, and others, so that we can try to, the goal is to try to, over time and in the modeling, increase certainty and have better, again, visibility of our demands today and demands going forward to full build out of the community.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Just to delve in a little bit further, are you looking to build factors that, say, for a commercial building, a certain water use per 1,000 square foot of commercial building, and then add on irrigation to that, is that the sort of thing that you're looking to develop versus kind of a gross I guess my concern ends up being with the DCSU or DS or DCSU model, which looked at the acreage of an area that was zoned. This is several iterations ago. And it didn't seem to account for the total number of units that were available under OVLV. So I guess I'm wondering what the basis of our demand estimate is going to be. Is it, we're looking at undeveloped acreage, or are we looking at undeveloped unit counts under OVOV? And you get two very different numbers, as I think we found out some years ago. So just
read. Yeah, Director Marks, again, great question. We, in the existing model, we use the land use phasing and development phasing as through some general plans and some specific plans, using land use types that were, I think, pulled from the One Valley, One Vision plan. The issue that we saw was that there was a gap or delta between that and perhaps what might be used in SCAG'd traffic analysis zoning data. And so our objectives are, when we create our business as usual scenario, we will be running both a land use based scenario as well as the SCAG TAZ scenario. So I believe that both of those, there'll be some unit count. There should be unit count similarities, and we should get pretty close to the same spot. The challenge is that a lot of land use parcels, as they're developed, do not necessarily align with the traffic analysis zones. So you could have, a big plot of land that may have half of a traffic analysis zone inside of it, half of it outside of it. And so you kind of have to, in terms of these layers, you kind of do some estimation work So our goal is to mitigate that, is to, again, run the model through both a land use-based planning objective model and a traffic analysis model, which is available, that data is available through SCAG. And we believe it's updated every 6 months. So that's the other thing, just real quick on a side note, that we think is a benefit. And what we'd like to do with this model is to develop some automation in terms of maintenance that would take API information as it's available and keep the model updated in real time as that econometric data comes in from TAZ, as well as building entitlements and actual buildings. So just wanted to kind of note that on the side, which is it's an exciting opportunity for us, but there's some work to be done in order to accomplish that.
Forward to having more details on that as it develops.
Absolutely.
You know, also, in the past, we had a assumed 2050 build-out date. Will your analysis be looking at if that's a reasonable assumption or if that should be adjusted?
Our analysis will be looking at if that's a reasonable assumption or if it should be adjusted.
Great, thank you.
Ms. Martin?
Yeah. A couple of questions, Matt. The per capita targets through 2030 and beyond, is it, I know these come out of Sacramento, but is there science behind these numbers? Is there some indications that there is the ability to get down to those levels? Do you think those are achievable? I suspect there's still a good amount of waste in our water consumption, but those are kind of low numbers. And that's our consultant's job to give us the tools and the guidance to get that done.
That's a big objective of the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan, is to look at saturation of existing conservation, but also the opportunities that are embedded in the community. And then we have to balance those between what the analysis shows us is available conservation and also what our community is wanting to uptake and participate in. So I'm an optimist, and I think that, you know, my job is to figure out how to accomplish these goals in the most cost-effective and efficient manner as a public administrator. That's my job, and in my career, I've been able to successfully meet the targets that we've been given. So I'm optimistic, but I'll have far better understanding of that when the analysis is done. So that's really to be determined of where those opportunities are. I do think there are embedded inefficiencies that we can improve in our community while still maintaining an amazing, wonderful quality of life that we know here in Santa Clara Valley. The question is, how can we do it effectively and efficiently?
Okay. Second question is, we just came out of an extremely wet winter to the point where we have surplus water. And I suspect the public's viewpoint is we're still asking people to conserve when we've got surplus water. How do you deal with that mentality that quickly changes from season to season? And if we were to run into a number of seasons of continuous abundant supply of water, and you're still trying to accomplish these what appear to be significant reductions in consumption, what does your experience tell you as far as how you're going to be able to do that? In terms of convincing the public, I know we always say there's never enough water to waste, but we might be getting into an area where it's going to make some difficulty for people.
Director Martin, it certainly could. I've been to several talks that experts, hydrologists, academics, are suggesting that we are going to see a period of aridification that essentially means wetter wets and drier dries, and we might have years where we have multiple wet years followed by long periods of drought. And so that set of factors creates, in my mind, whiplash effects, you know, where we're moving at one speed with one understanding of our water supply and then moving at a different speed the very next year, as we just saw, where we were in the driest year on record, moving to one of the wettest. So I think that it's our job to work with customers to identify, again, those effective conservation. We know that our customers want the highest utility of their water service, and they want it at the most affordable costs. And so in that perspective, I think we always have a winning case with water conservation and water use efficiency, because that allows customers to have the greatest level of water of utility from the water service at the lowest cost. However, we're also going to have to see some significant transformations of landscapes in our community, away from climate inappropriate and topography inappropriate or incompatible landscapes and irrigation techniques into things that are far more resilient and robust. So for us, you know, it's continued engagement, continuing to point out the successes of our customers who participated in programs and those that will in the future. But what I'd like to see in our strategic plan is a very concerted effort and focused effort to have appropriate levels of stakeholder engagement with the community, so that when we develop these measures, it really is in line with the community's philosophy about water conservation, water use efficiency, ethic, long-term, short-term sustainability, and then also kind of recognizing that water security, water affordability, water reliability are all empowered and enhanced through water use efficiency. We can combine that argument with the agency's exemplary banking programs and exchange programs, knowing that we're putting water away for those dry years, which could be drier and longer for us. And then also, again, like I said, working with customers on wet years to be most efficient with the resources that they have to achieve the greatest utility for the water service. So I'm optimistic, but I am very enthusiastic and prepared to approach this plan in a way, in somewhat of an epoch way, where we're going to learn from it. So I'm going in with all eyes open and all ears open so that we can better serve the community as we develop this plan.
Well, it's a worthy goal, but you got your work cut out for you. Good luck.
Thank you, Brother Morton.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up to what President Morton mentioned. So the population of California is growing, but our rate of growth has decreased substantially to the point where the rate of growth in other states increased and we lost, you know, congressional seat. In the legislature, is there any sort of language in terms of population growth and conservation efforts? Or that's not present in there at all? And mostly it's driven by, you know, climate change and conservation philosophies?
No, I think that the impetus behind the legislation, Chair Ozerhofsky, is a cumulative effect, an aggregate effect of population growth, water supply challenges, showing decreases in reliance on the Colorado River system as well as the State Water Project system. Aridification models show that climate change may impact water availability by 10%, which is, you know, that may seem small, but I think many of us have heard that M&I use or municipal industrial use is 10% of our water consumption. So this is significant when you put it into that perspective. And so I think population growth, climate change, making water conservation a way of life, putting these things together show that we can weather and adapt and mitigate many of these challenges through not just water conservation alone, but an all hands on deck approach through supply reliability, supply storage improvements, groundwater storage improvements, water quality improvements. But conservation, water use efficiency at the end use level are certainly part of that equation as well.
Okay. Okay. Let's move on. But you know, thank you for this update. I do appreciate slide 14, where you outline your project ownership, system support, and the fact that you're not working in a silo, but utilizing all departments at SCB Water. Thank you for doing that.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, no further questions, comments. So let's move to item 5.2, sustainability managers, staff activities presented by Mr. Dickens. Mr. Dickens, go ahead.
Well, that's thank you, Chair Zerhofsky. I was getting ready to go get a refill of my water, and so I'm glad that I stuck around. Just a couple of updates to share with the committee. One, we did welcome this week a new conservation coordinator to our team. James Doyle comes to us with experience in sustainability, having worked also in some agency in Palmdale, the water agency, and also working here in the city. So we welcome James to the team and just wanted to share that. Further, I think we shared that the agency won its fourth consecutive EPA, US EPA WaterSense Excellence Award. And since then, have already completed two very large multifamily apartment checkups, which is a very important piece of the process where we evaluate all of their indoor facilities, install high-efficiency shower heads and aerators, fix toilet leaks, but also do a pre-inspection for the ultra-high-efficiency toilet retrofit, which we expect will be over 1,000-plus toilets to be retrofitted here in the short, not-too-distant future. So more work has been accomplished. We've already done 2,000 toilets this year, as well as an 80,000-square-foot park that was converted in a multifamily apartment complex from water thirsty cool season grass to drought tolerant garden and a recreation area at one of our apartment complexes. So we're very excited about what's occurring in that program. I would also like to share that the in terms of sustainability, that we have three efforts on the horizon that one launched last month and is now in the planning phase. We have started, we finalized the contract for the battery storage project at Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. We are now in the design phase that incorporates the consultant group as well as SCB Water engineers and operations staff. So we're working together and collaboratively to get that project hopefully commissioned by this time next year. So that's exciting. In addition to that, the agency has procured an agreement to consider monetization of our renewable energy certificates that are generated from our solar facility. Those can range from, $5 to $15 per megawatt hour. Those are things that we can sell and monetize. We produce quite a bit of megawatt hours in our system, over 10,000. We also launched a tariff credit audit program to make sure that the agency is optimizing the surplus power that's generated at the power plant by our photovoltaic systems. Then we apply those credits to the benefiting accounts across the agency to maximize the value of that system. It should be noted that's a pretty big step because when that system was set up, it was set up by our predecessor agencies, Castaic Lake Water Agency, and ergo the benefiting accounts were limited to that facility and Santa Clarita Water District. But now we're able to include all of the agents, all of the legacy districts, or all of the agencies and entities and facilities that SCB Water owns and operates. So we think this will be a great opportunity to optimize the value of those credits that the solar field is creating. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Any questions from members of the public attending in person?
I have a question for later as to where you are on this agenda.
Thank you. Any questions from these directors, comments, questions?
No questions, but just again, like we said last night, Board, congratulations to you and your staff for the awards and the work that you guys do. Well done.
Yeah, indeed. Are we listing all of our accomplishments on the website, somewhere on the front page? Is that being done, Mr. Dickens?
Chair Ezra Hosky, I'm not exactly sure, but I will check in with the communications team and get back to you.
Okay. Thank you. And as far as the credits for our solar panels, so my understanding is that now we can extend it to all facilities owned by SCB Water, right?
That's correct.
Is it possible to see what kind of reduction in billing we receive because of that from SoCal Edison?
That's the objective of that contract, is to audit not only to identify the benefiting accounts, but then to audit the actual benefiting accounts receiving the credits from the solar facility.
Okay, understood. Thank you. No further questions. We're going to move on. But before we move on, Ms. Kang, is staff ready to present item number 3?
We are.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Let's go ahead and move to item number 3. Recommend adoption of a resolution approving the SB221 water supply verification for the Tesoro del Val Area B and C development. And that will be presented by Mr. Vassilopoulos. Mr. B, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Osahowski, and good evening, committee members. I am Rick Vassilopoulos, Water Resources Planner. I'm here to discuss the water supply verification prepared for the Tesoro del Valle project. Next slide.
We'll get it next time.
Maybe. There we go. First, I'll just do a quick, it's basically the same presentation that I had given for the Sand Canyon project a month and a half ago or so. First, I'll do just a quick presentation outline. I'll first discuss what the SB221 water supply verification is. Then I'll move to the project's description and its water demands. I'll talk about our approach in projecting future water supplies, and then some supply and demand comparison, and finally, our conclusions and recommendations. Next slide. Yumi. Sorry about that. So the SB221 water supply verification refers to a legislative requirement aimed at ensuring sustainable water management. It mandates local agencies to verify sufficient water supplies before approving new developments. Water supply verifications are triggered by an approval for a development agreement or tentative map that includes a subdivision of a residential development which exceeds 500 units. Verification approvals may not be granted unless a sufficient water supply will be available to serve the project over a 20-year planning projection, including normal, single dry, and multiple dry years, based on the water supply verification supported by substantial evidence, including, but not limited to, our current urban plan and the water supply assessment for the project. A key difference between a water supply assessment and a water supply verification is that the plans and estimates developed under the water supply assessment statute must be replaced with firm assurances of supply, although these supplies can include future planned supplies. Also, water supply verifications are not a part of CEQA, and their sufficiency is subject to direct legal challenge. Next slide. So the Tesoro del Valle development is located north of the existing Tesoro development, and it's north of Copper Hill Road. Next slide, Amy. And the project is planned, is a planned residential community developed on approximately 1,200 acres, all within our SCB water service area. The project consists of 665 single-family homes, 155 multifamily senior villas, a five-acre park, and 134 acres of dedicated irrigation. The balance of the proposed project will be open space. It will not include any irrigation. Next slide. The projected water demands for the project were calculated using the same methods we used to calculate future demand in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. Project's demands in a normal year are projected to be 847 acre feet per year, with the demands increasing to 898 acre feet in a single dry year and to 864 acre feet per year in multiple dry years. These totals reflect the additional demand of 25.6% above the model water efficiency landscape ordinance standards and a 3.77 climate change factor. Next slide. Staff's approach in preparing this water supply verification included updating our supply projections using the most recent information that we have. The verification is based on both current and planned water supplies from the 2020 urban plan, but current conditions are taken into consideration by utilizing DWR's 2021 final capability report and modifications to the recovery schedules of wells, which will be impacted by perchlorate and VOCs. The modified schedule also includes PFAS treatment for all wells, which do not meet the newly proposed US EPA maximum contaminant level. Next slide. So the State Water Project Table A reliability percentages used in the 2020 urban plan were updated in this verification for our supply projection. The verification uses DWR's final 2021 delivery capability report. This update showed a decrease in both the single dry and normal year reliability percentages of the State Water Project, where the multiple dry year reliability stayed virtually the same as it was in the urban plan. Next slide. I've also conferred with operations and engineering departments to adjust the scheduling of treatment for both our Saugus and alluvial groundwater wells. We had Kennedy Jenks amend our groundwater treatment implementation plan to include all of these changes. The Saugus wells shown here are impacted by perchlorate and VOCs, as well as PFAS contamination. But four of these wells are scheduled to be back online by 2025, with the other five starting up by 2028. As of now, initial tests prior to the construction of Saugus 3 and 4 showed no PFAS contamination, so no treatment is anticipated. Next slide. And this table shows the alluvial wells, which are impacted mainly by PFAS and when they are scheduled to come back online. Overall, an additional 9 wells may be impacted by the US EPA's proposed MCL changes for PFAS compared to the 2021 groundwater treatment implementation plan. 34 wells in total may need treatment for either PFAS, perchlorate, or VOCs. All of these wells are currently scheduled to be back and up and running before 2029. Next slide. So comparison of SCV Water's projected supplies to our demand is shown in this summary table. The table shows that our water supply is sufficient to meet demands for all year types through the required period of time for this verification. Supplies in the table include all of our existing and planned supplies listed in the 2020 urban plan, but they're updated with our most recent information. These supplies are consistent with what the code for the water supply verification allows. The water supply demands shown in the table are the same as the 2020 urban plan, and the water demands for the tesoro development were included in these projections in the urban plan. Using these projections, we find our water supply is sufficient to meet projected demands in normal multiple dry and single dry years throughout the study period. Next slide. And one last point to make is that we have not updated any of our demands with this water supply verification. They are assumed to be the same as the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. This graph shows how our actual demands have decreased over the last 15 years, although the assumptions of the urban plan have them increasing over time. As an example, in 2015, it was characterized as a fourth year of drought. The actual water use was around 54,000 acre feet, where the 2010 urban plan showed a demand projection of 80,000 acre feet. Also, in 2020, it was characterized by below average precipitation in the 2010 urban plan, which showed a demand projection of 81,000 acre feet. And in the 2015 urban plan, showed a demand projection of 76,000 acre feet, when in actuality, the demand for this year was closer to 65,000 acre feet. And so far this year, actual water use in the valley is only about 45,000 acre feet through October. Demands will obviously increase as other developments come online, but we also think that demands will not go as high in the future due to our new regulations and through measures taken by our conservation team. Next slide. So in conclusion, the project's long-term water demands were included in the 2020 urban plan. Staff compared these demands against updated urban water management plan water supplies. And staff has concluded that the total projected water supplies over the 20-year period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Tesoro Mill Valley development, as well as existing and planned future uses. Next slide. That being said, staff's recommendation is that the Water Resources as Watershed and Watershed Committee recommend that the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency adopt a resolution approving the SB 221 water supply verification for the Tesoro del Valle areas B and C development, and direct staff to submit the water supply verification to the City of Santa Clarita. And that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Vassilopoulos. Ken, can you start the clock? Any questions from members of the public in person?
A lot of questions about that. And I'm interested in how you vote on it.
Does that conclude your comment?
Yes.
Okay.
I would like to
know which way you're going. Any questions, comments from public attending virtual?
There is none.
Okay. Directors, comments, questions?
We've seen this.
Right.
I had a few.
Director Marks?
I'll just
forget
Tommy.
Okay.
President
Martin?
No, I think, the report is thorough and conclusion is obvious, so I support it.
Okay. Yeah, same here. A very thorough report. I do have a question on page 35 on the board packet. That'll be page 2-8 on the verification for the Sorville Valle. Mr. Vassilopoulos, let me know when you get there.
Okay, one more time. Section 2-8.
2-8, yes.
Let me get this.
Table 2-7.
Come on, where's that?
Page 35.
Okay. I've got to open up the thing. Close. All right. 2-8, 2-7. Section 2, and there's 4, 2-6, 2-7. Okay.
Okay. All right. So looking at table 2-7, the residential indoor demand, GPCD, we're considering 50 for all units. My question is, have we always used 50? Has that number been decreased or increased, or is that something that we always use for verifications and assessments?
I would say from the time that I've been doing these, so for at least the last 3 or 4 years, we've always used 50 in that spot, and that was what was used in the urban water management plan as well.
Is that something that we choose, or is that something that's mandated to be chosen? Is there history behind that particular number?
I don't know. Director Marks has his hand up. I think he might know the answer to this one.
Well, prior to this latest state of legislation, the state mandated interior water use conservation level was at 50. So that's the background of where it came from.
Okay.
So it's supposed to be 55 and then ratchet down to 50.
So we don't use a little bit more than what's requested by legislation?
I think the...
Or mandated to use that number.
My recollection was when we went through the last urban plan that some ground truthing was done by the Dows, and that the 50 gallon per capita number seemed to be about where we were at as far as newer development.
Right, understood. Confirm that, Mr. Ellison. Okay, that's the only question I have. Thank you for the report, and thank you for the presentation and for the last slide showing our actual demands throughout the years. That's definitely something to show for it.
Director Rozowski, I just wanted to mention one thing. I just wanted to thank Rick for doing this presentation while he's on jury duty. He just came today from the court. After finishing that, he came directly to the presentation. And so we have been involved in the jury duty for the last week or so. So it took a lot of his time. And so, but at the same time, he was doing all of these analysis and work. And so I really appreciate that effort from him.
Okay. Well, thank you for your service.
Yeah. Thank you. I only have maybe two more weeks to go now, so.
Get your $7 a day or something.
$15.
$15, wow.
Plus mileage.
Okay, you can retire early. Okay, so we go ahead with no hesitation here and no objections. We move this to the board for board vote.
Yep. Want to put it on consent?
That's not going to happen.
I tried.
Nice try, Rick.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and move to item 4.1, Water Resources Director Staff Activities, presented by Mr. Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, directors. I have a presentation today, which is not normal that I will do my staff, but we have a lot of activities over the last month that I needed just to put my thoughts on one presentation, and hopefully it's going to be a good one. So next slide, please.
Okay.
So I will start with the current water supply update. As of the end of October, as you heard from Rick, it's about 45,000 acre feet. It's exactly 46,400 acre feet by the end of October. 25% of that coming from met with groundwater supplies, and as one of the things that we started early this year, that we wanted to maximize the use of our imported supplies, mainly state water project. We used about 75% of our to meet our demand from the imported water supplies. At the same time, as you heard from Sarah in the previous presentations, we were trying to, and all of the effort that you have been doing through the summer, we're trying to move water to our bank, try to replenish our bank because we have been using it for the last 3 years. As of the end of September, we were able to move all the amount that we contracted with Rosedale to about 20,000 acre feet. Which is translates to 17,800 after losses. So that's in the bank now. As of end of September, our bank has 76,000 acre feet. And we moved also about we were planning to move 5,000 acre feet to semi-tropic. So far we moved 4,700 acre feet, and the total balance in Semi-tropic is about 35,000 acre feet as of now. So between the two banks, we have more than 100,000 acre feet, which is, I think, a good effort that started many, many years before I joined. And Sarah is carrying the effort and continuing to move this. So really appreciate the effort and also the partnership we have with all of these agencies. Next slide, please.
Can we put more in at the first of the year?
We're trying to do that. So, but still, as you might know, we still have more water, excess water that's available for us. It's still available for us. We don't know what will happen in the November and December. And as you might hear now, that there might be a big storm that will come next week. So in anticipation for all of that, we were trying to move as much water from St. Louis so that we can have the benefit of that. We entered, as you approved as a board, we entered into the exchange agreement with Rosedale 241, and we were planning to move 25,000 acre feet. We were lucky to, I'm going to call it lucky because DWR is very slow in approving a lot of those agreements. But I think Sarah has done a lot of behind the scene questions and emails and calls to DWR, and we are finally have a fully executed and approved agreement from the DWR. Talking to Rosedale recently, we understand that they're starting moving the water in November. The agreement with Westside Transfer, where we are selling water to Westside at least with a least amount and up to about 10,000 acre feet. The DWR agreement is going to Kern Board next week. And so we're hopefully after that, we're going to have a fully executed agreement with them. And they're planning to move water as soon as possible also. The third agreement that we entered into is United Transfer. We have a fully executed and approved agreement with them. The plan as of now, they are planning to move water starting November 16th. It seems like DWR is having some infrastructure repairments in permits, and so they are not done. None of the water is going to be able to be moved before the 16th of this month. And so they are trying to move at least 2,000 in that window of time. And extra water that they needed, they are planning to move it in December.
They moved it back down to Castaic or Byron.
Next slide, please. One of the other efforts that we have been engaged and staff have been engaged in this, in addition to other staff from the other departments of the agency, we were evaluating the Water Resilience Initiative list of consultants that's available for us, and staff determined that there is three main areas of expertise that we wanted to improve and add more to it. And these areas are integrated groundwater management, data collection and management, and structured decision making. And so we have published an RFQ in September. We received about nine responses from different consultants. We ended up with selecting seven of those consultants for those different areas. The next step is going to be for each one of those areas, we're going to develop an RFP. We're going to send it through this list, and they are going to be competing to provide their vision and their proposals so that we can do the work that we're planning to do. This is a very important step in the next steps. As yesterday, you heard, and this committee heard that before, we heard about the work that we're doing in the environmental analysis that we are doing with using the habitat model that we have developed. And yesterday, you heard about the reliability model that we have done. Now, this is the third component of that big tool, which is the integrated groundwater management. And how you can connect all of that through the structured decision making that will provide the the board with the ability to look into different alternatives and make decisions based on the information that we're providing. So this is very helpful. Next steps are going to provide the RFP to all of these consultants within the next month, and hopefully planning to start work early January of next year. Next slide, please. So staff have been doing a lot of activities, and the main goal of these activities is to develop more relationships, strengthen relationships that's existed already, and an understanding of some of these partners' way of doing things. So in the first activity that staff were engaged, the APWA Region 6 and 7, I had the opportunity to join Chair O into that tour. It was a very educational and very helpful to see some of the recharge projects that have been developed in flood capturing projects in Kings County, and how some of these projects were just, you know, quickly changing land, repurposing fields into recharge basins, and how quickly they were doing that. And then we had a chance to look into Tulare Lake flooding and the flooding impact. We have visited the lake, and also we had a chance to visit a couple of Westlands Water District recharge basins, and it's a similar idea, capturing flooding and excess water that's available this year and turning some of the fields into recharge basins. Then we came back and Friday the 13th, and Monday I had a chance to go with staff down to Westside Water District. They extended an invitation for us to come and visit their recharge basins. We started also with Wheeler Ridge, Maricopa, where they have been developing new recharge basins inside the district itself, in addition to their banking facilities in Kern County Water Bank. So we had a chance to visit their recharge facilities. We had a chance also to visit Wheeler Ridge, Maricopa's solar facilities. They have a couple of solar facilities, and we had a chance to visit that. Then after that, we went to Westside and visited the banking operations for them in the Kern County Water Bank. And we visited their solar system. They have a big solar farm in their facility within the district. And then we visited their water facilities. The other activity that I wanted to report on is the Water Summit 2023, which was in Sacramento. It's the Water Education Foundation event. And we had a chance to hear from the Secretary of Natural Resources and others on several issues, mainly legislative and policy change in water rights, recycled water, water conservation, the same topics that the water conservation topics that Matt Dickens was talking about. And also there was a discussion about SGMA, discussion about dam removal, and some of the management activities in Colorado River. It has been a good opportunity for us to connect with other members. We had a chance to meet with metropolitan staff, as well as other staff from other agencies. And actually, we had a chance to hear from some of the consultants that we are hoping to look into some of their activities and services into the future, and probably would have some of those ideas coming to you in the next couple of months. One of the last activities I will talk about, I'll try to make this short so that we can finish this early, Water Sustainability Summit in United Water Conservation District. This was done, I think, in October 26th, and we have been invited, we have been well represented in that by Steve, myself, and Sarah and Nigel. And we heard a lot of presentations. It was a very intense program. It was a lot of good presentations. They were talking about the adjudication that's anticipated in the basin there. They were talking about their water portfolio and how they were trying to maximize the use of state water projects this year, including some of the agreements that they mentioned. That's a lot, actually, in that presentation. In many of their presentations, we were mentioned as a good partner, as a good member. So that's a good thing. And they were talking about many of their projects and initiatives, and mainly infrastructure updates and upgrades. But I think the main theme was collaboration. they were talking about collaboration and how they were trying to build a big framework for partnership collaboration. And again, they mentioned a lot of the collaboration, including the agreement for the releases that we have been doing with them during the excess flood water that we have this year. And they are talking also about the water sale that we have with them. So I think we have a really good framework for partnership and collaboration with United. Next slide, please. And I promise this will be my last slide. Steve and myself, we had a chance to visit the Los Angeles County Sanitation District, their Valencia water reclamation plant here in Valencia. And we had a chance to meet with many of their staff, as well as some of the consultants. The main purpose of the visit is to look into the new facilities that they have upgraded the facility for mainly to target chloride. And also we had a visit for the entire facility. And we ended up with discussion about the coordination of efforts on development of the water, the recycled water management plan. And this is something that we are working with them. We have been working with them in the last couple of months. And this is something that we're trying to finalize and move on with it. Just a quick mention for a couple of other activities that we have also. Staff participated in the Water Academy, did a presentation in the first session about water resources. And also we have a couple of other outreach activities. Sarah has participated in, she was an invited guest to a class in college. It's in the college's Cal State Northridge. She was doing a presentation through a group of staff, a group of students about the water resources and water resources management and things like that. The last thing I will mention here also is Nigel participated in Orange County Water Summit, and she have been she and I think other staff from the communication also participated, and they had a chance to listen from different speakers about different issues, not only specifically to Orange County, but also issues that's impacted most of Southern California water agencies. With that, I end my report, and I'm staying for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the public attending in person? No. Any questions, comments from virtual attendees?
Yes, none.
Directors, comments, questions? Nope.
Good report. By the way, Najwa did a great job last night. Did a really good job.
Yeah, I got to say also, too, when I did attend the Region 6 and 7 AQUA meeting for and forum, Minister El-Hassan here anticipated, well, before even starting on the talks, we discussed issues concerning these regions. And I wouldn't say like 99% of the issues that he spoke to me about were then raised during the presentation. Very knowledgeable about that region. So I know it sounds like a broken record, but I'm glad that we have you on the team. Questions about the sanitation district. Did they go over how they are trying to fix the UV issues? Last time we toured that plant, they had issues with scratches and kind of an enclosement of the UV lamps. Has that been resolved?
Not yet. They are still working on it, but they have been adding chloride and other chemicals so that they can mitigate the impact of not having a fully functional UV. I think they are very close into fixing that issues. That's what they mentioned in the tour. And it seems like they are trying different methods. And again, you know, it's most of it is trial and error. So until they find the fix for that, but that's one of the things they mentioned, that they are still looking into how to fix that issue.
Okay. And without any objections from directors, I think the first three, four slides show the accomplishments of what we achieved here. I think that should be presented to the board. Could you speak with General Manager Matt Stone and Steve Pearl to see if maybe not necessarily a separate presentation, but within the purview of GM's report, you can go up and show them first four slides of what have you accomplished?
Sure.
No objections from directors? Okay. All right, let's move to item six, committee plan calendar. Back to you, Mr. Alassane.
We are working with union and other staff to update it, actually. So because we started having a lot of topics coming to us. One of the topics that we're going to bring very soon to the committee is recharge and the evaluation of the recharge, local recharge potential in the area. We are also will come back again with the selection of the consultants for the RFB for the integrated groundwater management, as well as the decision support system. So there will be some change that we were waiting for some of the projects to receive the final reports, and we want to do the presentation. But I think we will work with union and other staff so that we can present it to you next time. But I think we would like to present the whole year and just be cautious there's going to be some change because we are depending on some of the results that's coming to us, and we're trying to present it to you on a timely manner.
Good. We appreciate it. Thank you. Any questions, comments from public attending in person? Virtual attendees?
No.
No comments, questions from directors? All right. Thank you. We move to item number seven, adjournment. Thank you, staff. Thank you, directors. Thank you, members of the public who attended. Meeting is adjourned.